I read it, and so she did a Ruth Faxon on this track, the Regeneration, the Inescapable Imperative, did a good job of talking about you must be born again in order to be saved. So you need to be born again. So she said, that's why you have to accept Jesus and believe in Him in order He'll make you born again. Now what did she just do? She got it backwards. For her, our faith would bring about our regeneration. So it makes us participant in it. Now I don't know how she could do that when you look at the first chapter. You know where it says He came to His own, but His own did not receive Him, but as many as received Him, to them He gave the power to become the children or sons of God. Those to whom who were born, it says, we were born not of the will of the flesh nor the will of man, but of God. So in no way does our will have anything to do with it. Now when it says, for as many received Him, to them gave He the power to become the children of God, that's adoption. That's not regeneration. Who were born, and it takes place before the adoption. So when we receive spiritual birth, we are then truly the children of God and then become heirs, right? John emphasizes this in his first epistle. A very important verse. And by the way, he talks about this, being born of God, in chapters 2, 3, 4, and 5. In 1 John. But in chapter 5, it's very important. He says, whoever believes that Jesus is the Christ. Now notice, whoever believes, present tense, that Jesus is the Christ, is born. Literally, it's a perfect tense. Some of the translation says, has been born. Well, that's an action previous to the believing, right? Perfect tense is past action with present results. Whoever believes that Jesus is born of God, so whoever believes is born of God. If you believe that Jesus is the Christ right now, you're born of God. All the way back to that first exercise of faith. That first exercise of faith, you're born of God. That's why regeneration is imperative. Because it changes our disposition and leads to our faith, which then leads to adoption and everything else. Now let's go back to 1 Peter. So it says, He calls us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. So we have spiritual life, we have the hope of a future resurrected life. Just as Jesus was raised from the dead, we will be raised. That's our hope. That He rose from the dead. And then it goes on to say, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you, who by God's power are being guarded through faith for salvation to be revealed in the last time. So what he's doing is he's telling us we have an inheritance. Why? Because we are the children of God once we're born again. So we have children inherit from their parents, right? And what does he say? Notice what he has to say about this inheritance. He gives a description of it. He says it's imperishable, undefiled, and unfading. And it's kept for us. Well, you know, often inheritances are like put in trust, aren't they? You don't get it to a certain age, you come of age. But this inheritance, he says, is imperishable. Well, what could we contrast in here on earth? What kind of inheritance here would be a perishable inheritance? You got any ideas?
Investment account.
Yeah, investment account. You got this. You got a trust fund waiting for you. It's invested in the stock market. Stock market crashes. Oops. Maybe it's invested in real estate. Maybe it's invested in real estate. It turns out used to be land that a tribe of Indians was on, and now they want to contest it and want their land back. You know that can happen. That's the reason you buy title insurance, folks, when you buy a piece of property. That kind of thing can happen. You can find yourself fighting Native Americans over a piece of property that you just paid a lot of money for, or that somebody in your family paid a lot of money for and left you. Or you could buy a piece of property and find out it's got groundwater pollution. Now the EPA comes in and wants you to clean it up, and this cleanup costs are going to be worth more, cost more than the land is worth. I mean, then you can think of all kinds of scenarios, right? Come on. True. That happened. Yeah. That's right. Trying to give some kind of permanence to it, right? You know, here's what's really next. It's undefiled. It's pure. It means not morally tainted. It's an inheritance not morally tainted. See, this word undefiled is used in Hebrews 13, talking about the marriage bed is undefiled. But it goes on to say, but adulterers, the fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. So the undefiled there has an idea of moral purity. Can you think of an inheritance that would be a defiled, morally tainted inheritance? Boy, I can. Suppose you were an heir of Larry Flint, Hustler Magazine, or Hugh Hefner. Suppose the money left was built on a pornography empire. You wouldn't want to take the money, but you might want to talk about where it came from. What if your person that leaves you a lot of money was a swindler? You know, I worked for my father from the time I was 13 years old. Let me tell you, I had experience as a lot of young boys didn't have. I was introduced... I was a seminary student. I was introduced to a businessman that he did some business with. And I won't tell you his whole name, but his first name was Bully. He was a big, imposing man. Powerful voice. Big hands. And that was his nickname, and everybody called him Bully. Then I found out that Bully was a guy who was a wheeler and dealer, and he'd start businesses, and these businesses would go bankrupt, and the creditors would all be left holding the bag. And this happened once, and they said the creditors got a court order, and the sheriff's department showed up to seize his assets. Well, the house was in his wife's name. She had no, her name was not on any contractual obligations. The bank accounts, personal bank accounts, were in her name only. The investment accounts were in her name only. So they came after his car. He says, you can't take that. Well, we got a court order here. He says, well, I don't own it. I lease it. The leasing company owns it. Oh. They showed up his office with those two-wheel hand trucks. They're going to take out the furniture, the filing cabinets. Back in there, we had typewriters. Remember the IBM Selectric typewriter with a little ball on it? You know, can't take those. What do you mean? I don't own them. I rent them from an office rental supply. Do you think this was by accident, guys? No. He knew what he was doing. He had it set up that there was no way they could touch him financially. How would you like to inherit his money? I would say that would be a defiled, polluted inheritance. But God is holy. That's his most essential characteristic, is holiness. So we have an imperishable and an undefiled inheritance waiting for us. And it says unfading. How many times have you heard of people inheriting large sums of money and they go through it? We can't spend it all. The inheritance we're going to receive, you will not be able to spend all of it. Now, you know what's interesting? The way he describes it is all in negatives, right? He tells you what it is not, but he doesn't really tell you exactly what it is. Maybe it's supposed to be like Christmas. We're not supposed to know till we open the present. But we know this. It's not going to be anything like down here. And knowing that God is the creator of all things, and the way He has worked out our salvation, whatever this inheritance is going to be big. Now he goes on to talk about trials. See, he's given us reasons to persevere under trials. He talks about we're being guarded. You know, here's the other thing. He says that this inheritance is kept in heaven. You know what word he uses? He uses the word for garrison. It's like a military garrison. It's like there's sentries posted out there and nobody's taking it. And then he goes on to say, kept in heaven for you, who, that means the you, by God's power are being guarded. So the inheritance is protected and the heirs are protected. I don't know if you can put it in any more powerful way about how certain this inheritance is going to be ours. That's reason to be really encouraged to undergo testing. In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials. You know, this is the same language James uses when he says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. Same expression, various trials, different kinds of trials. This is not necessarily persecution. It would include persecution, but it can include a lot of other things. Now remember, he's writing to people who are dispersed and exiles. They're aliens. It's not easy to live in a foreign land. You don't have necessarily the same rights as the locals. You got to find housing. You know, and you got to be worried about people taking advantage of you. You don't have much recourse if that happens. You don't have any family there or countrymen to help come to your aid. So there are all kinds of trials. You worry about your children and the environment that you're in. Boy, my mother was right when she told me, son, you will not know what worry is till you have children of your own. I think about that all the time. Every time something happens, like Catherine goes back into the hospital or something. You know, so, or my grandson who got shot in the head with a flare gun, of all things. Which, by the way, he's doing a lot better. I mean, we face all kinds of trials. But hey, it's temporary. He says, though now for a little while you have been grieved by various trials. Not for a little while. In the grand perspective of everything, we're really not on earth that long. And eternity is so long that when you compare the two, you know, it's like this life is hardly a blip on the radar. So folks, be encouraged. And not only that, he says, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in the praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Now, he puts us through these, lets these things happen because there's a purpose for them. It proves our faith. It's one thing to make a profession of faith, but do we continue? Do we really believe in God? Well, under trials, we find out just how much we really believe in God. I think Peter is thinking about two things. And that has to be in his mind. His walking on the water. He said, if you command me, I can come to you on the water. And Jesus says, come. And he gets out there and he's walking on the water. Then he sees the waves. He takes his eyes off Jesus. You know the story. He began to sink and he hollers, Jesus, save me! Lord, save me! That's a picture of the Christian life. The Christian life is the impossible life, and only Christians can really live it because we are the only ones that have Christ to bring us through these life of trials. But he's also thinking of the parable of the seed, the sower, and the soils. First seed falls on the wayside. The birds take it. That Satan snatches away the word so they do not believe. But the next two, one's on the rocky soil, it springs up, it doesn't have root. And that's the one who believes, is happy for a while, but the trials of this life weigh him down and they don't produce fruit. And you see it. Then the next one is fall among the thorns that choke out the Christian life. They're so concerned and worried about their finances, so worried about acquiring what they think they need to live on this planet that they forget about God. And that faith is not holding them up very well. Now, he doesn't say those two are unsaved, but they really don't demonstrate true faith in God. But the one that pleases God is the one that falls on the good soil and it produces fruit 160 and 30-fold. Now, he doesn't say that those people are free from the trials or free from the temptation of the riches. It doesn't say that. In spite of all of that, they produce fruit. They grow in their spiritual life. And God is honored by it. And also, when you persevere and under trials and tribulations, your own faith grows. Your own faith grows. And what we should do is when we face trials and we pray to God and He gives us clear answer to prayers, don't forget those. I told a friend about the time we lived in Tunisia and Robin went downtown with a brand new baby with her mother. Got in a taxi and realized she didn't have a purse. She had put it in this big basket and it wasn't there. Well, it had a passport. It had a residency card. It had her money. It had keys to the house. And with the residency card, there was our address. All they had to do was get the address and go to our house and wait for us not to be home and go in and rob and steal everything. I had just started a new job. David was just a baby. When he was 11 days old, I went to get a Tunisian birth certificate for him and went into the municipality. They wouldn't give it to me. He says, this paper from the clinics, you have 10 days to come here, sir. It's the 11th day. I can't issue you a birth certificate. So I go across the street, the American Embassy is across the street, I go over there and I explain everything. He says, "Ugh." He says, "Do you need a Tunisian birth certificate?" I said, "Well, let me tell you something. You yourself told me you weren't going to give my first son an American passport or an American birth certificate until I first got the Tunisian birth certificate. I went and got a Tunisian birth certificate. It says, certificat de naissance, birth certificate. And I came back, no. I want the X-ray de naissance. What's the difference? Well, one is a long form, many pages filled out. I want that one. So I had to go back and spend another 2 weeks at the Tunisian municipality getting that." And he said, "To get this second son a passport, a Tunisian birth certificate, is going to be a big ordeal. If you insist, we will hire a lawyer and go through the process. But if you give me that paper from the clinic, I will get you an American birth certificate and a passport to keep them going through that." And so, fantastic. "Now, anything else can do for you?" Well, no, not really. There's an issue, but..." "Well, tell me about it." "Wife lost a purse downtown Tunis." "Huh? Yeah. Had passport, residency card, money, keys to the house. I gotta go through the process of getting a new passport, go back down to the Minister of Interior and get a new residency card for her. This is gonna take days." "And what did it look like?" "Oh, about this big." "And what color was it?" "Dark brown, tall kind of color." "And I said it had a shoulder strap," but he reaches under the counter, "look like this." He's, "What?" Let me tell you something. Robin had been praying we'd get that thing back. And I prayed too, but I didn't have much faith. Because all my friends at work, my friends in the church, my Tunisian friends on safety visit, "You can kiss that thing goodbye. You'll never see it again." And there was not even one coin missing out of that purse. Two policemen saw a group of kids fighting over it. "Give me that purse. Open it up. What are you doing with a purse with an American passport in it?" "We found it on the ground, sir." Yeah, right. Maybe. That was one of those incredible answers to prayer. And that was a real serious trial. So we've had a few of those. And have your test. It's not easy to go through. But to come through those, you really end up praising God. And you know something? I think it greatly pleases Him too. So, what we see here, we have reasons to rejoice in trials. First of all, they're temporary. And they're tests of a true, genuine faith. We learn what kind of real faith we have in God. And sometimes we fail these tests, right? But you pick yourself up, and you go, and the next time you pass the test. And trials endured result in praise and glory and honor at the second coming. I think these things will be remembered. So, you know, there are blessings of this faith when it's tested. "Though you have not seen Him, you love Him. Though you do not now see Him, you believe in Him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory, obtaining the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls." It's worth enduring trials. It's worth this relationship with God. Now, concerning the salvation, the prophets who prophesied about the grace that was to be yours searched and inquired carefully, inquiring what person or time the Spirit of Christ in them was indicating when he predicted the sufferings of Christ and the subsequent glories. You know, he says that they actually were inspired by the Spirit of Christ. Now, you think of Isaiah. he writes, "Behold, a virgin will be with child and bear a son, and she will call his name Emmanuel." He knew he was predicting something significant here. This was going to be the Messiah. We didn't have any idea when it was going to come about, or just the circumstances or anything. "For a child will be born to us, a son will be given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace. There will be no end to the increase of his government or peace, or of peace, on the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and uphold it with justice and righteousness from then on and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will accomplish this." Great. When? Who? What? Where? How? So all the prophets had this curiosity. I mean, Isaiah had a lot of things revealed to him. I think the lesson here they prophesied a lot, but they understand less. They understood less than we know now. But they knew what they were prophesying was big. It was enough to enable them to persevere in trials. And you think about it. Jesus said to the Pharisees, "Woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets, and it was your fathers who killed them." So the prophets didn't have an easy life. Remember Jeremiah? He got put down in a well, didn't he? Stuck down there. Because they were mad at him for the things he prophesied. So they understood that these trials were temporary. And they knew and understood less than us. So it was encouragement to them to persevere should be an encouragement to us. I think that's the reason this is given. My opinion. If you don't agree, you can tell me. But I think we need to close. Jeff, will you close us with prayer?